fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
We're good. John, it has been a couple weeks since we last talked. Obviously, the last thing we talked about was the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl, and we did promise the people a Sonics pod. Sadly, that is not this one. We both had a little bit of time off, got to do a little vacationing, and now we are just vibing, ready to talk Mariners. Spring training just started. So anything from you, John, before we just dive in right now?
No, I'm ready, man. Lots of spring training to talk about as, you know, we ramp down from football and get into one of our favorite times of year, which is baseball.
Yeah, I love the start of the baseball season. Well, for those of you on the podcast, I'll throw in some Coyote Picnic right about here, and we're going to stay live on YouTube while we go there. Spring training, obviously, like we just said, it started, and what we wanted to do today is mainly just talk about like what we are looking forward to this Mariners season, like how the Mariners have improved, where do they kind of stack with regards to like each position, like positionally, where do they stack with regards to the rest of the league, that kind of stuff. So we're going to kind of break down all of the main starting positions, you know, all of our starters. We're going to talk about the catcher all the way through the right fielder, all that good stuff. And it's gonna be a fun pod. We're just gonna kind of talk through everybody and get excited about this Mariners team because we haven't really had a lot of time to break it all down before we've gotten going. But do you want to start with the pitchers? Do you want to start with the hitters? Where do you want to start with?
I guess let's start hitters because I think especially in relations to spring training, a little more excitement and fun talking about the pitchers is, you know, they do something slightly more real. Obviously, spring training is all in the ether, but it's more fun to talk about the hitters for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Those of you that are watching this and thinking, oh my God, Cal Raleigh's hitting 125 in spring training, our season's over. Listen, it's spring training. We can't be worried about this too much. This is their warm-up.
Yeah, the lesson, as always, in spring training is only take away the positives. That young prospect that you're hoping is going to turn into a stud who's playing great, he is going to be great. And your star player that's sucking, he's going to be fine. So only positives from spring training.
Yes. All right. Well, with that, let's start off with the catcher position, right? We're just going to kind of work our way through the field roster. So we're going to go catcher, first base, all around the infield, and then to the outfield. And so with that, we'll start with Cal at the catcher position. And we're going to use FanGraphs up for a lot of this and then Baseball Savant just to kind of look at their last year stats, kind of compare them to what's projected here. But FanGraphs has Cal projected to be the best catcher by 1.5 WAR, which is quite a substantial margin, right? He's got a 6.4 projected WAR. And that's just pretty exciting. Now, he's not projected to hit 60 home runs. We can all kind of talk ourselves down from that point. I don't think Cal's going to be a 60 home run guy. But looking at his season, you know, obviously great projections. How are you feeling about Cal going into 2026?
Good. Yeah, I think, you know, the big takeaway on the Cal front is be ready for regression and don't pull out the pitchforks. You know, we thought he was one of the best catchers in baseball when he hit 30 home runs for us. So don't expect 60. I think right now he's projected to hit 40 in 2026 per FanGraphs, which I think is a very reasonable estimate. I'd be a little disappointed to see him fall all the way back down to 32 or so. But if he hits 40 home runs, you know, what I would like to see from him is pitchers will probably pitch to him a little bit differently. So the home run rate is going to decrease. I would love to see his walk rate increase as he plays smart at the plate. So if he can hit, you know, 35 to 40 home runs, but, you know, increase his walks by like, I don't know, 20% from last year, I think that would be a big step up in terms of adjusting to what he's given.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think Cal, it's going to be interesting because obviously we haven't really talked about it a ton, but the ABS is going to be implemented as kind of a challenge system. So that's going to be a fun thing in terms of Cal's defensive metrics. I think he's been a decent framer, but it's not like framing was his specialty. He's more of a, you know, block the ball backstop. And when it comes to his WAR and that kind of projection, that kind of helps him when it comes to comparison with other guys who are more framing oriented. But obviously most of his WAR comes from the bat, and he's projected to have a 230 average, which is kind of like last year we talked about where we would be happy with Cal's average. And I think he ended up somewhere around the 250 mark. He might have dropped down a little lower as he was going for the 60 home run mark later in the season. But 230 is where we would love to see him, slugging around 500 with his projected WRC plus is like 130. Like, these are all things that as a catcher, you just absolutely love. Your catcher is kind of like your field general. And for the Mariners, obviously, to have one of the best defensive catchers when it comes to just blocking and working with your pitchers and stuff like that, like, this is a guy who the Mariners are very excited to have in their roster as we move forward. But in terms of this year, I think it's kind of like we need to temper our expectations a little bit, kind of like you were saying. Like, Cal is not going to be that huge bat where you're expecting 60 home runs. I hope he doesn't swing for the fences every single time. The torpedo bat, the invention of the torpedo bat last year, I think really helped our boy out. So we'll see how that goes here. But I'm very excited for Cal in this season. I think it's going to be I think he's going to take a lot of load off Julio when it comes to like the stardom. I think he's handled it very well too. So when you really think about it, I think he's been one of the most additive pieces when it comes to improving Julio's status in terms of just like his ability to focus more on the game, more on hitting, and less on being the star. And Cal's been taking over that role in a real big way too, which I've been appreciative of.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I think my only worry for Julio is, you know, as he's reaching more of those prime years, I think Julio is 25 this year, you know, is now a time where you would start resenting not being the face of the team. But, you know, I think it is positive. Take it off him, let him grow a little bit more into his role. People aren't, you know, showing up waiting for Julio to do something. They're showing up very much waiting for Cal to do something. And yeah, even just the way he's handled the offseason and, you know, kind of being the face of the team, I think everyone's been really impressed. So, yeah, it'll be fun going into a year. This will be our first time going into a season saying Cal Raleigh is undoubtedly our most important offensive piece. So yeah, it'll be good to see how that goes. You know, as we're talking about, you know, obviously a lot of load placed on a catcher. He's coming off an absolutely tremendous season. I want to talk to you a little bit about the backup catching behind Cal. You know, where is relief coming from?
Yeah. So obviously the Mariners signed Mitch Garver to a minor league deal. I think I'm not sure if that's going to be more of a clubhouse minor league deal where he's kind of just like around and not playing much. And Andrew Knizer, I'm not really sure how to say it,
Knizer?
But he's one of those two is probably going to be the main backup catcher, and we'll see how they shape up there. But I would expect Cal to be playing probably, you know, 120 games at catcher and 40-ish games at DH and just cruising along. And I still haven't gotten a really good sense of if the Mariners think it's going to be Knizer or Garver. So I think spring training will be a big part of that. And then I think as the season goes along, if the Mariners say, hey, Mitch Garver, you're going to be with the team, I would expect it to be Mitch Garver just because he's worked with these pitchers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We want to keep some sameness as last year. But overall, I think the backup catching situation is not something where you're looking at that and you're excited about these backup catchers. These are guys that are just there to take the day and get Cal off of his feet for a little bit.
Sure. I guess I was hoping you could be a little more optimistic for me on Knizer. obviously, we know Mitch Garver is a very much a known entity in terms of what he's providing you.
Yep.
Knizer, I'm not sure how much you know about this kid. A kid 31 years old, older than us, but he had a couple of nice years on St. Louis with the Cardinals. He obviously spent most of his career there. 2023, his last year with them, he had 10 home runs, was batting .241 as a catcher, and, you know, was playing a lot of baseball. And then the last two seasons with the Giants, and I can't remember what the other stop was, the Rangers. He just wasn't
still in football mode.
Yeah, no kidding. He just wasn't playing. He hardly got any plate appearances, less combined in the last two seasons than he did in 2023 with the Cards. You know, is that an injury issue? Is that him falling off? Give me a reason to be optimistic about this guy.
I think the big reason to be optimistic is you can look at his baseball savant and you see he doesn't really strike out. He's a guy who puts the ball in play. And obviously in St. Louis, where it's more of a hitter-friendly ballpark, you kind of see that average tick up a little bit. You see the home runs tick up a little bit. But he also just got more playing time, right? He played 70 games, 97 games in 2022, 63 in 2021. Like, he was getting real playing time in St. Louis there for a few years. And the last couple of years, he's been around a 30-game guy. And so I would kind of expect, if he's going to be the backup catcher, to see more of the, like, Texas, San Francisco guy, which I'm not talking him up in any way right now, but in that sense, he's just going to be, he's going to be a guy who puts the ball in play, advances the runner. He's going to, you know, we're going to slot him in that eight spot basically. And just, he's going to get us through the game there. And Cal will step up in the DH role where it happens.
Sure. Obviously always tough asking somebody to play, you know, 30 games in an MLB season. Just hard to keep any sort of rhythm going. So you always lower your expectations, you know, even on what these guys could be when you were asking them to take a backup role. But all right, we'll see. You know, at the very least, I would love to see a lot of Knysner this year. I think I'm reaching the end of my Mitch Garver rope. I don't know how many more Mitch at-bats I have in me. Give me
you
something
brought us
new.
Back in towards the end of last year, and then we were like, no, wait, let's not do it again.
I'm not doing this again.
The big thing for me is I think about Harry Ford being in this scenario, and it's just like, imagine Harry Ford being put in this, you know, 30 to 35 games in a year type season. And it's just like that stunts growth developmentally for these kinds of guys. So we'll talk about Jose Ferrer a little bit more later, but I think the trade there was really nice. Harry Ford is going to get a lot of playing time. I'm sure we'll see him at some point whenever we play Washington here soon. But I think this is the kind of positioning where you have a catcher that's going to play most of the game. So you just needed somebody to be that, you know, temporary backstop, and Knysner will be that guy. Moving on to first base, we'll take a quick look at our biggest free agent signing of the season by far at Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor, obviously Mariners fan favorite. We love the guy. And first base being the position that it is, people associate it with power, and Josh Naylor is not necessarily the most powerful guy. But what are you kind of looking at Josh Naylor and thinking about this team? How does he fit? What are your obviously Seattle loves the guy. So what are the vibes coming into the season about Josh?
Yeah, I just can't tell you how excited I am for a full season of Naylor. Honestly,
dude, so stoked. 5 years. We get 5 years with this guy.
Yeah, it's crazy to think this is, and I'm being 100% real, on a team where you have a catcher that hits 60 home runs, has an awesome nickname, and is just a world-class teammate, that Naylor might be the fan favorite player on this team. Just because of what found money he was last year, but like, people love Josh Naylor, and I am one of those people. I think his projections, I mean, he's been so consistent the last, I mean, obviously had a bit of an uptick last year, obviously likes playing in Seattle, but his year-by-year stats are very consistent, and what we're seeing projected this year is just right in that zone. You know, 23 home runs, to your point, that's not, you know, world-breaking first baseman production, but that's plenty for what we've had in recent years. 270 average, I love to see if he can keep that up, and a 2.9 WAR estimated, I think is pretty reasonable. So obviously, you know, not our most important offensive player, but definitely I think the glue guy on offense, the guy that we're going to be counting on every single day to give us something. And I think that's really important on a lineup like this, where you have, you know, the Arozarenas and the Julios and these guys where when they give it to you, they're going to really give it to you, but they're also going to have days where they're not giving you much.
Yeah, I think the Josh Naylor signing, I was kind of thinking about this, and I don't think many people are talking about it. JP has been kind of the lead guy on this team for what has been the better part of 7 years, right? He got here in 2019, I believe, and he's nearing the end of his contract. He's nearing the end of his best years when it comes to really discussing when JP is going to be, you know, done with the Major League Baseball here. And Naylor kind of feels like the guy who's going to replace JP. I hate to say it like that, but he feels like the guy who's going to be the team leader going forward, right? Where you have your Julios, you have your Cals, but you also have your JP, and he's important to this team in terms of he's like the captain. He's the guy who wants to be that guy. And Josh Naylor feels like the person that the Mariners are going to rely on to be that next leader of this clubhouse. So I'm really excited to see how he does here. Obviously, you know, he's really been repping Seattle. And when it comes to his actual play, he is just like the best version of Victor Robles if Victor Robles was left-handed and large.
Yeah.
It's like he chases the ball a ton. He's got a 7% chase or 37% chase rate. He's got he's in the 7th percentile. So he chases the ball a lot, but he squares up the ball a ton. He's just swinging at basically everything. He walks 8% of the time. Like, his numbers would not imply that he's projected to walk 8% of the time. I'm sorry. He walks something around 8 to 9-ish on a year-by-year basis. But in general, he's a guy that doesn't strike out, but he also doesn't really walk. He just, like, puts the ball in play and also hits for power. Like, he's projected to have 23 home runs this year. He hit 20 last year. Like, he's just been a really solid guy, and especially in T-Mobile, where the right field bleachers just like beckon home runs. Like that is where the home runs go in T-Mobile. He's just a great fit for that ballpark. And currently on Fangraphs, he's projected as the number 9 first baseman when it comes to just total WAR that's projected. He's got 2.9 projected WAR, hovering around that kind of like Michael Bush, Yandy Diaz area where it's like, this is a very, very solid first baseman. But there's, you know, the upper echelon of guys like the Vladimir Guerrero Juniors and the Bryce Harpers and the Freddie Freemans who are just, that's not really where Josh Naylor lies. But really good, solid player, projected to have a 122 WRC plus. And it's just going to be really good. Obviously the most stolen bases of any first baseman, which is crazy because the man's in the second percentile in speed, but you just love that for the guy.
Yeah, he's great. There's also, I love Fangraph. It's got one of my most arbitrary stats that there's got to be something behind it, but it's just power rank. And it's just every offensive player in baseball and then, you know, all the pitchers essentially. And they separate relief and starting pitching, but all offensive players are just in one unit. And so I will say Cal was ranked number 4 of all offensive players. I'm assuming Shohei and Judge are 2 of the 3 above him, which I can forgive. Whoever the hell the third is completely beyond me. but he's sitting at number 4. Josh Naylor sitting at 31, third on our team in terms of offensive players. We'll talk about who sits at number 2 for us, but I'm pretty surprised, as you were saying, number 9 at first base in projected WAR, and somehow Fangraphs has him at 31st overall on offensive contributions. So shout out to Josh Naylor. Fangraphs seems to love him as much as we do.
Yeah, I think he's gonna have a really good year. Like I think he's just been so consistent, it's hard not to project a good year for him.
Yeah,
but like, oh, year over years, he hit 243 in 2024, but in general, he's been like a 290 to 300 hitter for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's just great things coming from
him. He also hit 31 home runs last year, so his home run production was down last season, and then obviously it picked up once he got to Seattle, so that's when you're seeing 23. I think they're assuming some positive regression on the home runs. I do want to talk about the one place they're showing real negative regression for Josh Naylor, and that is at stolen bases. Our round king, after 10 in 2023 and 6 in 2024, logged 30 in 2025, a vast majority of those with the Mariners. And these buffoons at Fangraph have him projected to get 18 stolen bases. Come on, where's the love? Where's the love for the round mound of the stolen base?
The round mound of the stolen base is a crazy statement. no, they have to be conservative there. You know, they have to be a little conservative. They can't project Josh Naylor, the third percentile sprint speed guy, to have 30 stolen bases. That's that's a 30-30 season for Josh Naylor would be insane, and yet he had that. So that's just craziness going on.
He doesn't miss, man. He doesn't miss. I'm saying, for those of you out there looking for some preseason bets, the over on Josh Naylor stolen bases has got to be looking pretty juicy right now.
Yeah, if you can get that anywhere in the teens, take the over on that. That man is taking it.
He knows what to do.
Are you good to move on to second base?
Well, sure. I guess real quick, do you want to talk Luke Rayleigh wisdom at all in terms of backup first base?
Yeah, I guess we could do that. Luke Rayleigh as just kind of a guy, I think Luke Rayleigh has been pretty good, but he seems kind of like an odd man out. But it is nice because he can be that kind of fourth outfielder, second first baseman kind of thing. Where he's kind of positionless because he can do everything that's needed. He'll probably play once or twice a week, kind of be that, I don't know, a couple of years back, Mitch Haniger was kind of the every third day he would play a game and be the third outfielder. And that's kind of what I expect Luke Rayleigh to be. Like he's at this point gotten consistent enough playing time that, or not consistent, inconsistent enough playing time that he's used to it, you know?
Yeah.
Not like Harry Ford, where we were talking like Harry Ford might have some struggle with not playing. Like Luke Rayleigh's gonna know, hey, okay, today's my day, I gotta wake up, lock in, do my thing. So I like Luke Rayleigh. I think he's always been a good player. His splits have always been a bit wonky, but he's a guy who puts the ball in play and hits for power and, you know, steals bases. Like he kind of does everything well, he just hasn't done everything great. So I like Luke Rayleigh. I think he's a really nice backup.
What I would like to see, too, is obviously he got a lot more run in 2023 and 2024, moving into a different role last year. I would just love to see his production bounce back a little bit. Obviously, his totals aren't going to creep towards what he was getting when he was, you know, having 400 at-bats a season. But if you look at last year, his slugging, his home run percentage and his stolen bases and his average, everything really just kind of dropped as he adjusted to a much more minimized role on the team. I would just like to see those numbers creep up because he will play games for us. Yeah, whether it's at first base or in the outfield or wherever. And if he's going to play, he's got to generate more power than he did. Because he was, he was a 20 home run a season hitter for us and then just four last year in a 200 at-bats. So that's not going to cut it.
Yeah, he was dealing with injuries too. But I think what the Mariners would love to get out of Luke Raley is a really strong start to the season and then a trade. I think they would love to trade him for value. If I'm being honest about Luke Raley's value for this team moving forward, he's a 31-year-old combo first baseman outfielder. The Mariners would love to get anything of value for Luke Raley from like a decent competitor.
Well said. I like that move as well. I like Luke, but you've always liked him more than me. So I love value even more.
His value plummeted towards the end of last season. So the Mariners are just kind of like, hey, we need to get you to hit more, and then we'll trade you back to the Diamondbacks or wherever you want to go. Go back to the Rays when you were hitting, had 400 ABs, that kind of stuff. Because he's a guy who I think would love more consistency, but he also just like his splits are so weird that he shouldn't really. He's more of a platoon bat. With a lefty and Josh Naylor, it's like, I don't know that Luke Raley's going to get a ton going anyways. All right, moving on to second base. Second base for the Mariners is bit confusing because obviously we had Cole Young last year as well as Ryan Bliss, who people have kind of forgotten about, but he had that bicep surgery as well as I think a meniscus surgery. So a guy who was actually slated to be our starting second baseman didn't really get much playing. I think he played in like 20 games over the course of the season in Ryan Bliss. But now it's looking like it's going to be Cole Young. So we will see how that goes. I don't know. I don't really know how this is going to go. I think Cole Young has a real shot to be good. But I just don't know if he has a real shot to be great this year. I think he's going to be our, 7-8 hitter and just be the guy who has a real big home run every once in a while. But if he can take that next step forward that we kind of expected from him when it comes to his hit tool, I could see a lot coming from him. Do you have anything that you're excited or that you've seen, in terms of recent news, spring training stuff that you've gotten a hold of that you've been like, okay, I could see Cole Young doing his thing?
Yeah, well, he's getting a real opportunity is what he's getting here. This lineup is, especially with Donovan at third base, obviously, he played second at St. Louis, so there was a discussion of would he be at second or third for us, but I think it's the right move to limit Master Boney and instead give more time at second base to Cole Young. Young kid, 22 years of age. We didn't see a ton out of him last year, limited at-bats. Obviously, for a guy that hit 211 and only had four home runs, he was pretty famous for his clutch hitting. So I think when you see that, that's a really good sign for me that, growth in terms of your, at-bat to at-bat is, in the cards. It's going to be a really big year for him because, again, our lineup is starting to look really, really nice, and he's a big glaring question mark. I believe in his ability, but if he can put it all together this year, it's going to be a huge, huge benefit for this team. And if he can't, it's going to be a big glaring weakness there at second base. So, he's had a pretty good spring training so far. I've seen some nice hits from him, but in terms of what to expect, it's just tough. I would love to see him get to his 211 average up closer to 250. And then, the slugging is probably not going to come for a while. I want to be patient with that. But just be an at-bat contributor and try to keep strikeouts down.
Yeah, he's always had a good eye. He's always a high walk rate, decent eye. I think last year, in terms of his actual walk rate, it was like 11%, and then he was striking out only 18% of the time. So good numbers there. But when it comes to, his bat-to-ball skills in terms of his just quality of contact, that was the thing that was kind of lacking, I think, when it came to he was popping out a lot, ground balls that weren't in the right, weren't going to the gaps. What I need from him is more line drives. And with that, he kind of has the opportunity to play himself into continued starting role. He's probably going to get a lot of the Ben Williamson treatment that was last year's experience at third base, where it was like, hey, you've kind of got this only because of the circumstances, but like as soon as somebody comes along and proves that they can outdo you, you're probably going to be the guy that gets, sent down to the minors or whatever it is. Like if Colt Emerson or if Cole Young struggles and Mariners are like, screw it, Colt Emerson's going to be the guy that can come up and Brendan Donovan can just either stay at third or move to second while Colt Emerson can go move up to third. It's like that might just be what the Mariners end up doing, which is nice. That is the big benefit of Brendan Donovan and that acquisition, right? It's like, hey, one of these guys is going to pan out here eventually, and we got to give them some time to work. But putting them in our 7 or 8 spot in this lineup and letting them marinate at the actual major league level, like that's what the Mariners would have loved to give Harry Ford. Yeah. I'm going to reference Harry Ford a lot because
no, 100%.
It's like kind of the glaring example of like you could have the Harry Ford experience or you could have the Ben Williamson experience, where Ben Williamson got everyday playing time for 4 months last year, and if he didn't improve, he kind of was stuck, and the Mariners were like, okay, we have to move off this guy because he had the opportunity and couldn't capitalize. And it's like Harry Ford was never going to get the opportunity, and it's two sides of the coin. Cole Young is getting the Ben Williamson treatment here, and I expect him to be able to perform to a higher level. I mean, Fangraphs has him projected at a .236 batting average,
yes,
1.4 WAR, but he's only projected to play 91 games, so like half the season ish. And I think if he plays well, if he sits around a .250 average and hits, you know, less home runs but more doubles and just more line drives, I would expect Cole Young to, you know, play 120 games this next season and have a really good year and be a really solid 7 or 8 hitter. So I'm excited for him, but it is, like you were saying, a big question mark on the season when it comes to like, okay, that's the spot where the Mariners are kind of letting that spot go by the wayside to give the future of their organization a chance.
Yeah. When, you know, to your point, it is really nice having him and Colt, you know, kind of opposite. You got kind of this wing formation of Colt and Cole, and you get to just give both of them opportunities, see which one of them is going to hit, you know, assuming one does. And then you can just fill in the other position as needed. So, you know, part of the big acquisition going out and securing Donovan is that it allows you to try both those guys, Cole and Colt Emerson, and really just see, can either of these guys take off? And if either one takes off, then you're in great shape. If neither one takes off, it's going to be a tough spot. But I think you and I both believe in the talent of those guys. So let's just hope one hits.
Yeah. Yep. All right, I'm going to take us over to third base, where we already kind of alluded to him. We've got Brendan Donovan as the projected third baseman as of right now for our purposes. I don't know, you know, roster-wise, there's probably Master Boney's probably considered one of those third basemen. There's a couple guys that this could be, but I think you and I are both in agreement that it's probably going to be Brendan Donovan for now until Colt Emerson either takes his spot, or if the Mariners at the start of the season are like, hey, you're going to be the guy, I think we're going to say it's Brendan Donovan. So I'm going to look at Brendan Donovan in this ratio. He's on Fangraphs as second baseman, but you can kind of slot him into that third base role as well. Projected to have 3 WAR, looking at a .273 average, 3.48 on base, 4.04 slugging for a WRC plus, a 1.19. These are just really solid numbers. Obviously, a really just really good contact hitter. He's not projected to have a ton of home runs. He's only got 12. But over the last few years, he's been just a really solid average guy in St. Louis. And he's just exciting, man. What was, like, obviously the move was the big deal. What was the vibe in terms of the Seattle atmosphere once that move was made? I think that's, you know, that's an all-in situation that everybody, I'm sure, was excited about.
Yeah, one, and you know, I think he fits like a glove. I think especially as we've seen JP, you know, start to fall off a little bit in terms of his production the last couple of years, bringing in a guy like this where he hopefully is going to be our average machine. You know, obviously Robles can play that role when everything's going well. We've seen other guys put stretches like that together, but in terms of a guy that you're going to expect to finish between .270 and .300 at the end of the season, there's little doubt that Brendan Donovan's going to fill that role for us. I'm very excited. I think people were excited just in the sense of things were so quiet there that any news was good news. But personally, I do think he's a great fit for this team. Not a huge power guy, but that's not what I want from him. What I love is that he's, you know, 92nd percentile in K rate, 95th percentile in whiff rate. He squares up great. His expected batting average is tremendous. So all the stats point to a guy that just generates awesome, consistent contact. I just think he's going to be a really important piece on this offense. I see him and Naylor making a lot of magic together when it comes to timely hits and consistent hits. So I'm a big fan of Donovan. To your point, second or third, he is technically a second baseman, but he's projected to start at third base with Cole Young at second. So him and the two young bucks, hopefully piecing together a bit of our infield for us.
Yeah. I'm very, very excited for Donovan. I think he's going to be a doubles machine. Like, you know how Randy is kind of the doubles guy, but he hits timely home runs. But I think Donovan's going to be another guy who's just like gap-to-gap doubles potential basically every time he comes to the plate. Like, he's going to hit line drives and just spray the ball all over the field. That's been his forte for his entire career, you know. He's 29 now, and he's been doing it year after year. The big thing for Donovan for me is if he can elevate those home run totals, that brings him to kind of a whole new stratosphere of hitter. And I'm not saying he should, but, you know, looking at his spray chart, he's got 6 or 7 home runs that were counted as doubles last year just because of kind of how the ballparks were arranged, higher walls and stuff like that, that would be home runs at T-Mobile Park. So if he can continue to hit like that, you know, his home run total might count up a little bit more, and you just see a little bit of that slug. And God, this is a guy who's just going to be on base every time Julio's up, every time Cal's up. I'm trying to determine if he's going to be the leadoff hitter. Can you get a sense of that? Have you kind of gotten a vibe?
He is projected to be first in the order, followed by Cal, Julio, Josh, Randy, which is obviously the depths of us. I think that's a great fit for him. He's built to be a leadoff hitter in my mind. Him right into Cal is great. I could even see a situation. I would kind of love to go Brendan Naylor Cal, but I trust these professionals to set these lineups better than myself. He's going to be great in that leadoff role. I really hope that's where we slot him, because again, as a pure average guy who, he's going to hit a lot of doubles. He's a 404 slugging guy without a lot of home runs. So clearly he's generating a lot of, you know, deep outfield hits. But even as a guy that's just going to hit a bucket of singles, I love seeing a guy on base with Cal coming up to bat, and that is going to be his job. His job is to get Cal in position with zero outs and a man on first. I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, the one interesting thing about him and that whole setup in terms of the lineup is that Brendan Donovan is not necessarily a stolen base guy. Like, he's going to get on base and he's going to stay there, which is going to be the thing that makes him nice to have in front of Cal, because Cal's obviously going more for the dinger and less for the double that turns into a run kind of situation. So I really like having him lead off. In terms of Cal or Julio, I think you kind of want to reset the lineup. I think it's a Brendan into Cal, and then Julio, you know, resets the lineup, has Naylor coming in after him, Randy, everybody. So I think I like that that's where the lineup's going. Anything else before we jump to the shortstop position?
No, I guess I'll just say on this stupid nothing power ranking system, 126th in terms of offensive players. I do think, again, I can't emphasize enough how underrated I think 300 hitters are. And I think it's a shame that everybody's going to take a guy that hits 30 home runs and, you know, hits 210 over a guy like Brendan Donovan. I think on the right team, Donovan's just as effective, so. Show some love to our non-slugging kings.
I think the big thing with that, and this is kind of a greater baseball discussion, but it's like you're valuing players on an individual level when you're looking at the value that they accumulate from hitting home runs versus their average. But when you look at them in the sense of a team, it's like, okay, if Brendan Donovan is on base and Cal is behind him, his value almost doubles just by him being on base as frequently as it is.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people are evaluating players on an individual scale, which is kind of the issue that baseball is having when it comes to like, oh, this guy's going to hit a home run. Cool, that's awesome. But it's like, you need to build a team. That's the beauty of the lineup that has a little bit been lost over the years.
Well said. And something that illustrates that too is he's third in terms of our projected starting lineup in terms of war. It's Cal, Julio, and then him at 3.0. Naylor's 2.9. But even being in front of Naylor in terms of war, he's, you know, 80 positions lower in terms of this power ranking. So arbitrary as it is, I'm a systems guy.
Yep. God, that is crazy. So of the 4 positions that we've reviewed, from catcher, first base, second base, and third base, we've got at least one of the top tier of that position, right? Cal is the best catcher in baseball, kind of inarguable at this point.
Yes.
And then you've got Naylor and you've got Donovan, who are top 10 players at their positions, probably.
Agreed.
When it comes to just their value, which I would define as above average to good. And then you've got, obviously, the Cole Young situation that is a little confusing there. So looking at this team, obviously the weaker spot is the second base position, and we'll talk about maybe that'll be a thing that the Mariners might adjust here in the future. But overall, that's looking like a good little situation for the Mariners right now, just in terms of the value coming from those spots.
When if you look at projected WAR, we only have two guys at 1.0 or below, and that's Victor Robles at 1.0. And I think you and I are both big believers in what Robles can be if he can stay healthy. Yep. So I think that might be a bit of an undersell on him. And then Dom Canzone at 0.8. probably the most confusing starter we currently have in our setup, but you and I both love him dearly. I mean, when he can be the funnest player on this team for a month, pretty exciting. It's been a long time since we've had this much WAR distributed across our projected starting lineup.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, let's move to shortstop here. Up next, we've got obviously the captain, JP. He's not necessarily projected to have the highest WAR, 27th out of shortstops, 2.5 projected WAR, and he's not a big defensive guy when it comes to defensive metrics. So where does his value come from? It comes from getting on base, walking, and a little bit of power, right? He's projected to have 12 home runs and be a 12% walk rate, 19% K rate guy with a 239 average, but a 334 on base. So he's kind of a pseudo Brendan Donovan. He's probably going to be that nine hole hitter again, where it's like, okay, hey, JP's going to be on base a third of the time Brendan comes up, and he'll just move it right along, be another guy that's on base for Cal. And I really like that for him. I think looking into the future, I think this is probably, you know, JP's winding down era. He's I don't know if this is going to be his last year with the team, but I think he's hitting that kind of like fading crest as he descends into the, depths of being invaluable as a shortstop. So what are your thoughts on JP coming into the season?
Man, I love JP. We both love him so much. I do think he's in a comfortable position where expectations on him have dropped quite a bit with this influx of talent. Obviously, you know, Cal reaching new heights and Randy coming in and Brendan Donovan coming in and, you know, some of the hopes for our young, you know, not rookies, but new to the big leagues guys. You know, JP can kind of disappear into the background. You know, he's projected to be our seven hitter between Canzone and Robles. But I will say too, you know, he had a great year last year. You know, 2023, he had, you know, a mini apex hitting 270 with 20 home runs and then really fell off in 2024 and had a rough year. But boy, he bounced back last year. You know, 12 home runs is good for JP for what you expect from him. Hit 265, which I was very pleased with, and, you know, came through in big moments. JP is another one of those guys that you just feel very comfortable at bat in a big moment. I hope that he can just kind of maintain this slow decline as he gets older. And he's 31 years old. He's not ancient by any means, but I think our expectations for him are, you know, if he can give us 10 home runs and hit 260 again, that's a big win for us. And he would still be a nice contributing player for the team. So, yeah, I like him a lot, but I do think it's fair to say that expectations are down.
Yeah, his arm, I think, is the real question mark here. When it came to the end of the season, his arm looked like it was falling off. Like, he could barely make a throw to first base. And so I don't know if that was a tendonitis thing, you know, where he just, you know, it hurt to throw kind of situation. And so he just couldn't put as much into it. But it was like every throw felt like he was short hopping Josh Naylor. And that over the course of a season can cause some issues. And if he continues to do that, we might see JP be moved towards that second base position. And maybe a Cole Young moves over to shortstop. Or Colt Emerson, that spot opens up. I think there's also the leeway with this roster for that to happen. But in terms of JP, I expect him to be probably in that bottom third of shortstops when it comes to the shortstop position. In and of itself is just so good. I think we are in kind of a golden age of shortstops right now with just Bobby Witt Jr. You've got Gunnar Henderson, Tatis, who's kind of a shortstop, kind of an outfielder at this point, but then Lindor, Betts, Ellie De La Cruz. Like, there's so many good shortstops. Like, it's okay to be in the bottom third of that shortstop position when you have other spots that are, you know, filling up the roster. But I think he did make some adjustments in his swing last year that allowed him to cheat a little bit and get back to that average, get back a little bit more power after that 2024 little bit of a downgrade year. So I'm hoping that he can continue to maintain his value and kind of keep doing what he did last year. But if we see a little bit of a decrease, I think we'll, you know, as we've said, he's coming down, and we will likely see him get a little bit worse every single year. But JP, we love the guy, and it's just great to have him as the leader of this roster.
Yeah, the fielding thing is a good point, and that feeds into our Colt discussion as well. As you know, Colt is technically listed as a shortstop right now, backing up JP. So, yep. You know, the idea of moving JP to second, Colt to shortstop, keeping Donovan at third, and then again, Cole Young would be the one losing time in that scenario. It's just good to have options. And yeah, as JP's arm doesn't look like what it used to, it's nice to not worry too much about what that's going to look like, because we're both big believers in Colt Emerson.
Yep. All right, let's take this opportunity to jump to the outfield, where we'll go to left field here. And left field, you know, Randy as a guy, I love Randy, but he's just kind of slowly been declining over the years. I think, you know, I know you're a big Randy guy, and even you would probably agree that he's not at where he was a few years back with the Rays. So break it down for me. What are you looking for in Randy this season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for what it's worth, he had a nice bounce back year last season. 2024 was definitely kind of the nadir of his recent career. 20 home runs, 220 average. And he bounced back last year, 27 home runs, 240 average. Obviously, you want to see him keep that power up. You know, him generating home runs is a big part of our offense, and we really look for that. But yeah, I just like to see him play a little bit smarter at the plate like he did last year. I was pretty happy with that. You know, as he goes into this season, you know, he's projected for 23 home runs, 233 average. Seems just about right. I'd love to see a little bit more slugging from him than that. But he's, yeah, projected to be a 3.0 war guy. It is kind of funny. You're right. I mean, he's clearly not doing what he did in the prime Rays days, but he's another guy that I think benefits, much like JP, of, you know, a lot of fun stuff happening on this offense. And, you know, there's not a ton of pressure on Randy Arozarena to be our second best offensive player. People just want from him what I'm expecting him to give, which is, you know, 20 to 30 home runs and some really fun moments.
Yeah, I think Randy is... Sometimes Randy feels worse than he is. Sometimes you just watch some of his at-bats and he looks foolish. He's kind of has the Julio situation where he gets fooled by sliders on the outside corner and stuff like that. Like, he's just, his approach can be a little finicky to work with as a baseball viewer. But all things considered, I think Randy is going to do just fine. He's projected as the 17th best left fielder to play this season, and he's got the main thing for me is, like, he strikes out a lot, and that's something that the Mariners have been okay with sacrificing for a little while. I would love to see if he does, you know, drop on home runs. I would love to see more doubles and just more like a contact based approach for Randy. But I think this is, if I remember right, this is his upcoming free agency off season. So this is probably going to be a year where he sells for power. This might be a, you know, 30 home run year for him. I would kind of expect that as he works his way towards his, what will likely be his final contract. So by the way, if you're a betting man, take the over on his home runs. That's the one thing that I would note there. But yeah, I think he's going to be, I think he's going to have a great year. I think he's a hustle guy, and he's a really necessary right-handed bat in this lineup. That's kind of full of lefties. We haven't really talked about it yet, but every single infielder on this team is left-handed that we've talked about so far. And so we just need more righties. And Randy is one of those guys that can hit the ball all over the field and be a good right-handed power guy that can break up that slew of lefties in the order when it comes to the postseason and, you know, facing left-handed pitching and stuff like that. So I think Randy's kind of a necessary piece to this roster, even though sometimes it feels like an extra part of the value meal. But he is very nice to have.
Yeah. Another good point about that too is, you know, he had a career high in home runs last year in 27. That's the most he's ever had in a season. And you know, I'm tired of saying it. I say it so much. You know, I'm such an average guy that I was a little disappointed. I was hoping we'd get more of that, you know, creeping towards 300 Tampa Bay hitting from him when we acquired him. But it's actually been nice to see him kind of just adjust the type of offensive player he is and, yeah, sell out a little bit more for power. And, yeah, start to turn himself into more of a closer to 30 home runs, closer to 210 batting type of player that is still very valuable in this league today. So yeah, between the upcoming contract and the fact that he's been changing the way that he plays, you know, creeping up towards 30 home runs is a possibility. I just hope it doesn't come at the expense of too many strikeouts.
Yeah, the big thing for him is that those doubles. The last couple of years, he's had 33 and 32 doubles, and then he also had, you know, 47 home runs over those 2 years. Like, those are good counting numbers, and it's just counting numbers because he plays so much that it's like, okay, Randy is a guy that will just accrue stats, right? He just gets on base, he walks, he's around every single game, and so you see him, you know, hit those doubles, hit those home runs. He had Also, by the way, 47 hit by pitches, which is just crazy over the last 2 years. So he's just a counting stats guy, which doesn't necessarily project him to be the best player, but it's nice to know that, hey, Randy's going to be out in left field every single day, giving the fans exactly what they want, getting as many balls into the bleachers as possible. A lot of good stuff coming from him. So I'm excited for Randy this year. And as he continues in his journey, I would expect a lot more home runs this year. I think he's going to be a 30 home run guy. All right, looking at center field, where we have the man, the myth, the legend, Julio Rodriguez. And I'm not even gonna give an intro. I'm just gonna let you off rip talk a little bit about Julio. I didn't prepare you at all for this, but I just want you to get your thoughts on Julio out there, because I have many.
No, I feel great. I mean, Julio was coming off an awesome season last year, where, you know, he had his ups and downs, but he put together about 270 with 32 home runs and 30 stolen bases. You know, he was really, really good. And I do think there's something to be said about, you know, when all eyes are on Cal, Julio's allowed to just be Julio. What we saw is in 2023, he hit 32 home runs, batted 275, and we said, I can't wait for next year. Next year, is he going to hit 40 home runs? Is he going to be the MVP of the league? 2024, he had a huge drop off, 20 home runs, 273 average, just was not generating power the way we expected. Last season, he basically jumped back up to 2023 levels. So now the question is, are we going to get another drop off? Are we going to see steady state? Is he just a 270, 30 home run guy, which, by the way, is awesome? Or is this the season he's going to, you know, creep towards 40 and play, you know, MVP level baseball? All good options. Obviously, you know, 20 home runs would be a big disappointment for me personally. But if he hits another 30, I'll be pleased. If he hits 40, and if Cal hits 40, and those guys are just going, you know, one after the other, it is going to be a really fun season of Mariners baseball.
Dude, the big thing for Julio is he's projected to be the best center fielder in all of baseball, which I don't think is a surprise to anybody. Kind of, it's been alluded to by most MLB media that Julio is the best center fielder in baseball, and there's a big reason for that is his defense. He's so good defensively out in T-Mobile. But the other thing is he hits 270. Like, he's just a 270 hitter all the time. And the crazy thing is, if you look at the second half of his season, in June he hit 289. In July he hit 236, but he had an 808 OPS. In August he hit 321 for a 944 OPS, and in September he hit 272 for an 899 OPS. Like, he's basically a 300 hitter in the latter half of the year, and the only thing that falls off is his, you know, start of the year stats, right? Everybody talks about it, but if he can put together a full season of the type of hitter that he was in the second half of last year, where he's a 900 OPS guy, like, well, I mean, in theory, that would increase his overall season OPS, because on the season he was actually like a, what was that? Hold on, let me do some quick math. He was an 800 OPS guy. So if he can sit around 900 OPS on the season, that's MVP level. Based on what he does defensively, like, if he can get there, that's a guy who can compete for an MVP spot. Mike McAleer says, this is the year we get a good April from Julio. I can feel it. I kind of agree with you. I think we're all, like, ready for Julio to break out. And we were just talking about it. You were alluding to it. The Cal thing is so important for Julio to just have fun with the game again, right? I think 2024, people talked about how he was just, like, so focused on being the star of the Mariners that he wasn't as focused on enjoying baseball. And I think when Julio is enjoying baseball, it makes baseball that much more fun for us as fans, for the fans of the Mariners. And if he can do that for the entire year, this is, like, a potential MVP season for Julio that is going to be just, it's going to feel like it was out of nowhere, but I feel like everybody also can feel this coming. It's kind of a weird Julio, like, everybody's looking forward to this season from him, and yet nobody is wanting to put any pressure on this guy.
Yeah. Well, and it's because last time we saw a big drop-off. I can't express the excitement going into 2024, what we thought we were going to get from this guy. So, you know, again, I'll take 275 and 32 home runs every single season for the rest of his career, and I'll do it with a smile. But, I will say the one thing, Mariners fans, if you're a better, the leg up we have on the rest of the market is, it is just infamous that April baseball is the Achilles heel of Julio Rodriguez. Obviously, you know, 202 last season. He's just bad in the month of April. If this April, if he's batting like 280 in April, I'm going to put some money on Julio MVP odds. And everyone else is going to be like, oh, he's playing fine, whatever. It's like, no, if he's doing this in April, you better be worried about what's coming in July.
That's the thing. If he does it in April, then yeah, July and September and August are going to be just crazy months if he's, because, you know, he always takes that step up. So if he's able to do it well in April, it's going to be awesome. In terms of projections, we're going to look at Fangraphs here. He's got 31 projected home runs, 26 projected stolen bases, still a decent amount of strikeouts at 22%, 7% walk rate. But in general, like, he's just projected to have a Julio-type season, right? 270 average, 330 on base, 477 slugging for a 129 WRC+. If he has a great April, those numbers will all be higher than what I just said. Like, if he has a good start to the year, these numbers will all jump off the page even further than what we're already expecting. So expect Julio to be awesome this year. I really am looking forward to what could be an MVP season from a Mariner.
Yeah.
It's just awesome to say.
Yeah, when, you know, should have been one last year, but...
I know.
The one thing I will say, too, is those stat projections are steady state. This is a guy that turned 25 in the last year. One of these years, he's going to play better than he did when he was 23. Like, that's going to happen. So I don't know if it'll be this year necessarily, but projecting him to be the exact same at 25 as he was at 24 seems a little bit of a disservice, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yep. All right, let's move on. We've still got probably like... 8 or 9 guys. We can fly through some of the pitchers as well, but we've got one more positional player, and that is right field. And we are kind of trying to figure out who that's going to be, whether it's Dom Canzone or whether it's Victor Robles. It'll likely be a platoon. But in general, we kind of are looking at both of them. And where we've got those guys in terms of MLB on Fangraphs, where they're ranked, Victor Robles is the 34th best right fielder in terms of WAR projection, and Dom is the 40th. How do you feel about just those numbers? I think... me looking at that, I have an opinion, and I want to hear yours first.
Yeah, well, I think he's horrendously undervalued. I know he's had some pretty serious injury issues the last two of the last three seasons, missed a lot of time, but 2023 in limited at bats, he was batting 300. In 2024, with more at bats, 250 of them, he was batting 307. Last year, he fell off a cliff and was batting 245. He had 34 stolen bases in 2024. He had 6 last year. So I'd say we just scratch 2025 off his ledger and just look for a repeat of 2024. I think he should be our starting right fielder, and I'm kind of expecting some exciting things from him.
I am in the same boat with Robles, and I think I'm even in more of the like hype boat for Dominic Canzone. Dominic Canzone last year, we alluded to it as the season was going along how great Dominic Canzone was. But as a platoon, like if we say Victor Robles, hey, you get to hit all against only lefties, I expect great, great things from Victor Robles. You look at his splits, and he just looks awesome, right? He hits basically versus lefties, he's a 289 hitter versus righties, he's a 213 hitter. And then you look at Dom Canzone splits, and you're like, okay, against righties, Dom's a 308 hitter, against lefties, he's 276. So he's great in both aspects, but he's got an OPS of 879 against righties. It's like, if we combine these two guys and actually platoon them and are able to do what we wanted to do last year,
yeah,
instead of Victor having that shoulder injury, this team offensively from the right field position is basically elite, right? That's a 300 hitter from the right field position that has an OPS hovering around 850, 800-ish, which is, if you're getting the production that is projected and we would have gotten last year from Robles and Canzone, that's almost an all-star level talent, which is just crazy to think about if you think about those two guys. But Dom was just so good last year. He had 311 home runs in just 243 at-bats. So just a really, really solid season from Canzone. And then Robles obviously was a little injury prone last year, but the 2 years before, like you were saying, 300 average hitter just looked awesome. So
yeah,
well, I'm very, very stoked for those guys.
Defensively, they're both plus guys too. Like, they're both 90th percentile plus arm strength guys. And, you know, Canzone's much more limited on range than Robles is, but, you know, Robles made arguably the defensive play of the season last year for the Mariners. He's a guy, he hurt himself making an elite defensive play last season. So if anything, I'd tell him to calm down a little bit. But not only can those guys both do great offensive things in the right situations, but both of them, and particularly Robles, I see as really beneficial defensive pieces as well. So that is a great point. We both love, I guess I should say, I love Robles. I know we both love Canzone. And together, I think they can be a really elite right field platoon.
The other interesting thing about them is they're both, as hitters, they have very... I guess the one thing is Dom has power, but they have very similar profiles where Robles is a swing as much as you can guy. He's kind of a no walks, put the ball in play. He'll strike out a little bit, but in terms of actual profile, he's just a put the ball in play guy. And Dom is kind of the same thing. We've talked about it, how he had to kind of adjust and find that sweet spot of, okay, I'm going to swing at a lot of pitches, but like my power and my ability to put the ball in play is what got me to the major leagues. And the Mariners kind of tried to take that away 2 years ago, I guess, now at this point. And last year, he kind of made the adjustment and got to that sweet spot. And so if they can ride the sweet spot for both of those guys and just utilize that as a platoon right field spot, that's going to be so nice for the Mariners this entire season and in the postseason, I would expect.
Yeah.
All right. Now it's finally time. I guess, no, not yet. We have one more position to discuss, and that is just the DH role. We don't really have a designated DH because obviously there's so many guys that the Mariners have in terms of Canzone. You know, if he's not playing in the field, he might DH. Obviously Raleigh's going to be a DH sometimes. Mitch Garver will be a DH. Raley, like, we've kind of talked about a bunch of different guys who could be in that spot. Is there anybody who you really are like, I think we should take this opportunity to just talk about, like, is there anybody who doesn't necessarily belong on this roster that you can think of right now? Like, if you're looking at it and looking at the depth chart, like, who is the guy that screams to you, like, hey, I don't know that I really have a spot here?
A spot to play?
Yeah, because I got one that just off the top of my head.
Okay, yeah.
We talked about him a little bit earlier.
I think they fit fairly well together. Like, Mastroboni might be the hardest to fit in.
That's what I was thinking. I think okay. He's kind of that, like, third or fourth utility guy that the Mariners will utilize, but he's going to get the least playing time. He's not going to DH or anything like that. Like, the DH is kind of a platoon spot as well. So. Yeah,
Mastroboni and Rivas are both in, I guess, a similar spot there, but I mean, we're also making the assumption that Cole Young and or Colt Emerson are going to be real contributors this season.
Yeah.
And if they're not, then Mastroboni is going to get, you know, 150 at-bats. So,
yeah, he's a safety valve.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say that he's totally ineligible, but I do hope that we don't see very much of him because our young guys are stepping up in a big way. I do think it's like, you know, Miles Mastroboni as a utility guy, as a fourth utility guy, that's a good place to be. And, you know, I wouldn't say we have any glaring, like, what are we going to do with this player? I think, you know, him and Rivas being emergency professional production guys is fine. And nobody's really going to waste. I will say, with the platooning, with how much I love Canzone and Robles, if you're platooning them in the outfield, you know, the other one could always be the DH that game. That kind of goes against the purpose of, you know, matching up with pitchers, yeah, clearly. But, you know, to your point, Canzone was pretty good against both sides. So maybe when Robles is out there, he's the DH. And when he's out there, yeah, maybe then it's Garver or somebody else. Yeah, it just depends on how this stuff moves around.
Yeah, actually, from what we've talked about, I think it's going to be Canzone is basically an everyday player. And yeah, then when we want the extra lefty, we're going to go Rayleigh as the DH or something like that. And
yeah,
then when we want the, when we're up against a lefty pitcher, for example, Robles is going to be in right field and Canzone will DH or something along those lines.
That sounds right.
But yeah,
right,
I think everybody's on this roster because obviously injuries can happen. Like, if JP goes down for a little bit, it's great to have Leo Rivas. Mastroboni can play any spot in the infield in terms of third base. It's really nice to have him there. But in terms of the most disposable guys, obviously you're talking about those bench players. I think Mastroboni is kind of the guy who doesn't fit nearly as much, just because I really like what Rivas has been doing, honestly, the last couple of years. So, all right, let's talk starting pitching. And let's just talk pitching in general. But we're going to kind of fly through this. It's going to be a quick one. The starters in general, I think the Mariners have the deepest starting pitching position in all of baseball, right? You've got Logan Gilbert, will probably be our day one starter. Brian Wu, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, Luis Castillo, all amazing pitchers, all projected to be definitely top 100 guys. I think we have three projected in the top 50 when I was looking at it earlier by Fangraphs War. You've got, let me just count them up. Luis Castillo is in the top 50, whereas Bryce Miller might be the only one who's not. Yeah.
So what we got is Wu is projected to be number 8 overall at starting pitching. Gilbert's 28, crazy. Castillo's 30, Kirby's 41, Miller's 266. And I think two things jump out at me right there is, one, Logan being so much below Brian Wu all the way down at 28, I think that's a disservice to him. I see him being much higher than that. And then also Bryce Miller obviously deserves to be lower than those guys on a separate tier, I would say. But 266 seems crazy to me. I think he sits more something closer to 90.
Yeah, he had those bone spurs last year. And same thing with Gilbert. He had those injuries that kind of sidelined him for a bit. So I think those injury concerns or those injury situations are what have gone into these values, because Bryce Miller was out for basically what felt like half the season last year. So they make sense when it comes to you're looking at last season and the production that they had, and this that's what this algorithm is taking into account. But you have to also think, like, you know, Bryce Miller is going to be pitching more, you would expect. Brian Wu is probably going to regress a little bit. He had just an amazing season, all things considered. Like, if he can take a step forward, he's in the Cy Young conversation. So all of these things lead me to believe that the Mariners have one of, if not the best starting staff in all of baseball. Do you really, I don't think there's any argument there. Maybe like the Tigers with Tarik Skubal and Framber Valdez have kind of taken a leap forward. But other than that, there's really no one else that I could think of besides maybe the Dodgers.
I was going to say it'd be the Dodgers. It wouldn't even be the Tigers. Yeah. It'd be the Dodgers.
Yeah. I was thinking AL, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, in the AL, I don't think there's any doubt at all. I mean, Detroit, I'd probably take Toronto over Detroit in terms of a whole, you know, starting rotation.
Yeah.
Clearly, Skubal's the best, if not second best pitcher in baseball. But yeah, in terms of what we have here, again, with me saying Logan and Bryce are both severely underrated, we still have four guys in the top 40. That's just crazy work. I think that we've got two guys in the top 15 in Wu and Gilbert. So we're deep. We're also very top heavy. We got lots of different types of arms here. I'm really excited. I just hope, obviously, you know, knock on wood, we already lost Logan Evans to Tommy John for this season. I hope this is the year that those five guys can stay relatively healthy and play most of the season. I think that would really, and I also hope that Castillo is able to you know, hold on as he creeps up in age.
Yeah, I think the big thing to consider here is, and it's a very good thing, is that Emerson Hancock had what was a pretty good year last year when it came to filling in that number five starter role. And then additionally, we've got Kate Anderson kind of in our back pocket, who I would expect to see given spot starts late in the season, especially if somebody ends up going down with an injury. Like, I would expect Kate Anderson to be the guy who slots in as that, you know, maybe they'll pivot to kind of a six-man rotation if it comes down to injury and they don't want to up Kate Anderson's load too much, and they go kind of a Hancock and Kate Anderson back-to-back starts kind of thing. Both of those guys are very, very capable of starting at the major league level, and Kate Anderson, maybe he'll be even better. Maybe he can slot into like a number three pitcher role where he could next year take over the Luis Castillo spot and push Bryce Miller down one. And at that point, it's like that is probably the scariest rotation in all of baseball. Like, you know, when you think of the entirety of the rotation, yes, Paul Skenes is scary. Yes, Tarik Skubal is scary. But like day to day, it's going to be insane what this Mariners rotation is able to do. And if they're able to repeat the even Luis Castillo level production from a Kate Anderson type, that's a level of this of baseball, like pitching staff, that I don't think has ever really been seen, which is kind of crazy.
Well, yeah, just have five guys like that too. And also, you know, we'll see what we get. I think this is a big year for Bryce Miller in terms of what is he going to be as a pro.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of those guys that came up kind of young, so he's been playing with found money. But I think this season's going to go a long way to say, like, where does he really stand in terms of a five-man rotation? But if he can develop too, if he can take a step forward, and then you've got Cade coming around the corner, bad times for hitters everywhere, especially in T-Mobile.
Makes me excited, man. Makes me excited. Okay, let's jump. We've already been talking for like an hour, and let's jump quickly to the relievers, because this is something that a lot of people have been saying, hey, the Mariners need another arm. And it's like, hey, every team would love another bullpen arm. That's like the entirety of baseball. They're like, oh, what could we add to make this team better? A bullpen arm. That's everybody's answer. If a team is complete, that is what everybody's like, oh, we can make it better. Listen to this top five relievers that I have pulled up for us. Munoz, Matt Brash, Jose Ferrer, who is probably one of the best lefty relievers when it comes to, he's not a closer, but he's just a reliever. He's one of the best lefty relievers. Gabe Spire, who's starting for the USA, or not starting, but one of the relievers for Team USA. And you've got Edward Rosario, who last year just cemented himself as one of the premier relievers for this Mariners organization. And then you've got guys like Carlos Vargas and other guys like that. But like that top five should be able to get you through 80% of your games. If you really think about it, like Munoz is going to do great things. Brash is going to do great things. Ferrer is going to be awesome. Spire is going to be great. Like, this team is built to be awesome from the bullpen as well. And I'm just like, I almost can't believe that people are saying they could use another reliever. Like, this team knows how to pull relievers out of their ass.
Yeah. I mean, we have other issues before we need a sixth arm that's really elite. Yeah. Obviously, you know, we've got eight guys in the bullpen right now, but we've got five in the top 75 relief pitchers in Major League Baseball, based on, again, these relatively arbitrary power rankings. But yeah, five in the top 75 is amazing. The fact that our lowest two in terms of that are Matt Brash at 51 and Bizzardo at 72, that breaks my brain a little bit because those are two of my three favorites. but yeah, what you get out of Ferrer and what you get out of Spire is just awesome as well. And yeah, the fact that Vargas and Casey and Cooper, those guys, we're just not really going to need much of anything out of them. And, you know, we have to get 10, 15 Carlos Vargas innings a season, I can sleep very well at night. I'd way rather, you know, make sure we've addressed, you know, third base and, you know, shortstop and some of these other issues before I worry about a sixth arm. So I feel awesome about our pitching rotation. I feel great about our bullpen. I'm kind of wiping my hands until the inevitable injury comes. I'm kind of wiping my hands of this pitching staff and just putting my eyes on these hitters and trying to, you know, scout out these guys and see who's going to hit and who's not. I know what we're getting from these arms.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this year. Yeah, I want to shout out also, where was it? Casey Legomena. And Mariners signed Dane Dunning. I think we talked about that a couple weeks back. But that's a guy who you can either lengthen to make a starter if you need, you know, for an injury risk or something like that, or you can make him into a reliever. Those are two guys that you can slot in as well. Like the relieving situation, I think of all teams, the Mariners should not necessarily be as concerned about as the development of these hitters. So I'm in full agreement with you, man. All right. Other than that, I think we've touched on everything that was Mariners. I think that was today's pod. Did you want to talk about anything else before we sign off here?
Man, I could do another 2 hours on this, but yeah, we should keep it moving. There's going to be lots more to talk about. We didn't even talk much about the results of spring training games. Maybe we can hit on more of that next time. But that's a great little preview of what we've got cooking in terms of Mariners baseball. Get excited. It's starting to get sunny out here. The tulips are sprouting. I can't tell you.
Floaters and flounderers are calling my name.
Yeah. March Madness is around the corner, and after that, I belong to baseball.
All right. Well, for John Carey, I'm Tyler Cartwright, and this has been the Sound Up Seattle podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of Sound Up Seattle, please feel free to drop a like, subscribe, do all that good stuff on YouTube, or follow us and do all the good stuff as well on the podcasting app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there as well. You can find Sound Up Seattle on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram at Sound Up Seattle, all lowercase, all one word. You can email us questions, comments, concerns, excitements about the Mariners at soundupseattle@gmail.com. You can find me, Tyler, at TyCart50. Everywhere is important. And you can find John.
Enjoying some tennis, man. The sun's out. Good to get the racket in hand.
I miss tennis with the boys over in Seattle. We'll get to it soon.
Get back.
All right. With all that being said, not much to say for this pod except go Nerds, baby.
Yeah, go Zags. We couldn't touch on college basketball today, but we'll have lots to talk about the Zags next week.